Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
We are back live in Nashville on a great Friday afternoon, the first weekend of the college football season. We're on Broadway. Yes, you heard me correctly. And we've talked already with so many important people here. We will continue. By the way, as we welcome you back to the second hour, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, will join us. We'll get his reaction to what happened in the ACC, how it all impacts the CFP, and even the future, perhaps, expansion in the SEC. Joe Rexroy joining us, longtime columnist here, now with The Athletic. Before we get talking about this weekend here, Joe, you sat behind a computer offering opinions for many, many years on the comings and goings in college football. What do you make out of the ACC move?
Yeah, I mean, just like a lot of things lately, I really don't like it at all. It seems just like a kind of desperate scrounging of money, and you see who voted against it, and I think you can see where things are going to go, right? I don't like it at all. It's bizarre, and it's like a lot of things lately in college.
Yeah, I mean, when you see the three most prominent schools in the league that is already struggling for relevance go against it, it tells you all you need to know about this league.
Exactly.
Or seemingly.
Yeah, so I think we're headed toward something like a lot of people have feared for a long time. I'm hoping that it's not as drastic as it may be.
Yeah, well, it seems pretty drastic.
It's pretty drastic.
As we get ready for all these fans are here in Nashville not to hear about the story of the summer, but to watch college football, and we will see Tennessee here. And all the years you've covered Tennessee football here in Nashville, it's hard to believe that there's optimism because this program has just been so far down. Your thoughts on this really magical turnaround under Josh Heupel?
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. Well, look, Vols fans keep coming back, Paul. As you know, they just keep coming back. And I think they're going to be rewarded. I mean, they've been rewarded, but I think they're going to continue to be rewarded. And I think especially, you know, with the 12-team playoff coming, I think Josh Heupel has got things set up. You look at how recruiting is going. For Tennessee to be in that, and that's going to be the focal point of the sport, as you know, once we get to that. And I think they're in good position to be there. You know, I think this year might be a little bit of a step back, but it's a step back from 11-2 and beating Alabama and beating the Orange Bowl. If it's a slight step back, then you can see the brighter future ahead.
It is pretty remarkable. I mean, everywhere we go, when somebody says, you know, hey, you're walking down Broadway or doing a radio interview, somebody says, who you got? And what's going to happen next year when I say, hey, Joe, you got in the final 12? I mean, that's a long answer.
Yeah, well, exactly. But look, I mean, I'm for it because the four team became so dominant as the conversation of the sport that it just, I think that it was bad for the sport. I think this will be better for the sport, but you're still going to have a lot of teams, of course. I mean, you still have it now. There are years where the four, you know, there's no way the four is winning the title, right? You're going to have more teams like that, but I think we'll also have more games that we want to watch in the playoffs.
Joe, I wanted to ask you about the other school in town. I checked in my hotel across the street from Vanderbilt, and you know they're off and running. They have a game this weekend as well, one that probably won't get nearly the attention that they did last week or this game. But how many times have you sat and listened to Vanderbilt officials talk about moving forward, and we've seen no progress, but this time it seems like there is progress?
Oh, there's no doubt about it, Paul. You know, they announced the $300 million investment a couple years ago. It's well beyond that. It's going to be, if it gets close to a billion, I wouldn't be surprised. And it's a long time coming. I mean, it's a lot of, it's decades of neglect, really. But I think Candace Lee has done a fantastic job as athletic director. Daniel Diermeier, you finally have a university administration that wants to invest in sports and understands the importance of it. So, you know, some Vanderbilt fans and maybe other fan bases have poked fun, the construction around the stadium. To me, if I'm a Vanderbilt fan, like, I put the hard hat on and enjoy it. Look it around you. Like, they are doing something now. And I think it's going to be a much more compelling argument to come to Vanderbilt when it, you know, they may not have the best facilities or the most NIL, but they're doing enough to say, and by the way, it's Vanderbilt University. Look at everything else that we offer. And I think they're going to make a stronger case to bring recruits in on the football and basketball front because of this.
And I don't know. There's something about Clark Lee, and I mean, I told him this, so it's not like I'm speaking out of school, but I literally laughed when I heard his original proposal. You know, we are going to be this. But I guess you can't say we're trying to be in the middle of the pack, which ultimately would be pretty good.
Yeah, well, and I think that the best program in America. So did you think of, like, say, Stanford at its height recently?
Right.
They weren't winning national championships, but they were very good and they had great academics. And so I think that's the idea, right? Be something like Duke. Well, I shouldn't say Duke basketball. They win national championships. But something like that where you have a lot of other things to offer, but you're still playing at the highest level. I mean, look, it's still hard for me to wrap my brain around that with Vanderbilt, but he is compelling.
No, and it's hard not to be in on what he is talking about. Just fascinating here. Just does not feel like a college football weekend with the sun beating down, but that's not unusual for the first of September. Joe, thanks. Always great to see you. And thanks for wearing the sport coat. I admire that.
I could have at least gone pre-Labor Day lighter color. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of botched this one. It's like milk on a hot day. But thank you. Thanks, Paul.
I've worn it on hotter, but never again. I take it back. I'll have one on tomorrow. Joe, thank you very much.
You.
We'll take a short break. When we come back, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference will join us here.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, welcome back. It's great to see the commissioner. We saw him at the end of the program last night in Columbia. You're here. You're going from here to Charlotte.
Charlotte Saturday night, and then Orlando Sunday.
Man, you got like the dream trip.
Well, that's one way to look at it. I left home Tuesday, and when you're hopping from like one hotel to another, it's hard to pack for 6 days and 3-4 games.
But you
and CFP meetings.
I remember last year you did that.
I did. Yeah. Well, it's a fun part of the week, you know, year. I was at Vandy last Saturday for the Hawaii game. And, you know, before most people have attended their first football game, I'll have attended 5.
Yeah, that's right. So let me ask you, you started this sojourn in Dallas. I heard some of your comments after the words, and you were waiting for some of the other dust to settle. It has. For yeah. now.
Yeah. What is it's been a fascinating 30 days. The good news, if you're a conference commissioner, is these expansion things usually mess up your July 4th weekend, which is the one, like, four or five-day period you can actually not check email. So this happening in early August, through August, we were working normal anyway. It's been an interesting few days, few weeks. Very different from what we did 2 years ago. You know, 2 years ago, we had universities reach out to us, you know, all this notion about TV managing people. This was about what was right for the Southeastern Conference, our 14 members, Oklahoma and Texas. We have talked in our meetings about, should we be thinking west? So I had outreach from the West Coast back the week after the Oklahoma and Texas move. And that's not who we are. In fact, you're going to talk to Chancellor Plowman. Months and months ago, we were speaking, in fact, really last year, and she had one of the clarifying points that says, you know what, we actually know who we are. We've made really good decisions to set us up for the future, so we have the ability to determine our path as a group. Our fans know us, we're comfortable in who we are, and we're really excited about moving to 16. We have a great season ahead, but what's ahead for us? We added two schools. Think about this. We added two universities, Oklahoma and Texas. The Big 12 now, I guess, is positioned, well, they had to add eight after Oklahoma and Texas left. The Big 10's added four, and now the ACC's added three, and you know, the humble Southeastern Conference will be at 16.
And all this has happened since?
Subsequent. And remember the Alliance?
I do remember that.
That was fascinating, and you know, I know why that was done. When I'm here and I'm talking to you about, we're going to focus on growing the 16 and making decisions that are right for the Southeastern Conference, and people debate and wonder why. Well, there's a reason why.
If I could go back to something you just said, you talked about outreach from the West Coast and the two schools from the West Coast that moved after that conversation were pretty obvious to the Big Ten. Was that something that it just didn't feel right, or it wasn't worth exploring?
Yes. I had calls and I would talk to our campuses, and that's not who we are. You know, the whole "it just means more" thing, we're on Broadway. We're going to have an incredible crowd tomorrow, I think primarily Tennessee fans. I said to you, as we look ahead to next year, when we go to 16 teams, I expect every season ticket to be sold in this conference. I think that will be unique among conferences. Our fans are excited about Oklahoma and Texas fans coming to their place and other fans going to Austin and to Norman for the first time. And that's the excitement, that's the wisdom and the decisions we made. A lot of credit to our presidents and chancellors. Some of those decisions were tough, some felt differently at times, but man, the excitement and the enthusiasm and the unity is something special, and we've seen that over the last few weeks.
I think there was also something that caught my attention today, and I'm not trying to compare and contrast, although it's pretty obvious, even though there was resistance briefly when the OU Texas situation happened, it was still a unanimous vote.
It was, yeah. And yeah, that week, remember, we had the leak story in the Houston paper, at a president's meeting on video conference the next day, and you know, not everyone was ready to go down that direction. And I was very open with Oklahoma and Texas that you have to clarify your future with the Big 12 first, and then you can apply, and there's risk, and there was risk. There were no assurances. On that Tuesday, certainly different feelings, and a great deal of credit to the leadership at Texas A&M, and there have been some leadership changes, and that doesn't mean everybody felt good in the moment, but I think what you've seen in the last 2 years has very much justified our decision-making. Joe Harris and Jay Hartzell, the two presidents, when they first reached out, they said, look, we've watched how your conference has functioned and how that group has made decisions and how you've led, and we want to be a part of that. That's not about money and TV. That's about creating something really special. And I truly believe what you've watched in the aftermath is an indication of how unique we're situated and how special the Southeastern Conference is. And I hope our fans and our teams and our student athletes reflect that pride, which I think they all do.
With the commissioner, during that process, and this is a conversation we've had in various forums, but you were vilified. A lot of accusations came from all different parties, and it doesn't matter now, but I'm sure deep down somewhere in your gut, you know what you did and why you did it, and now some of the things that you were accused of, which you have vehemently denied, and I think the Times have supported that, are happening everywhere else.
Well, I remember I called colleagues. So I called other commissioners, and I said, hey, after a few days, the unnamed blank conference source who says all they care about is the money, or the unnamed conference source who said this is dictated by TV. Those weren't true then. I informed them directly of that, and I eventually said it would be healthy for that to stop. And I'm happy to answer, and I said this to colleagues the first time we gathered in the CFP meeting, I will answer any question that you have. And I literally said there's one person in the room that has the right to be angry with me, and that was the Big 12 commissioner at the time, Bob Bowlesby. Because I think anybody presented with the opportunity that we had would have acted in the manner we did. And obviously others have acted since that make that very clear. But literally, Paul, after... You know, there's 4 or 5 days of the unnamed source saying this or that. From a critical standpoint, you don't lose sleep over that. I lose sleep over other things. But there's a time when it really needed to stop. It didn't, but I felt confident then. I feel confident now that we acted appropriately. It's never easy, and you never feel good. You know, I think I probably told you I called Mike Trangisi and said, what do I do? He said, there's nothing you can do. You just have to make the decisions.
With the commissioner... So 2 days ago, you were with the CFP commissioners and everybody, and it was still fuzzy because of what was happening. I'm not saying the dust has completely settled, but it seems like it has for the time being.
Yeah.
What happens next with the CFP?
Well, that's an important question. So we talked about format, and we're laser focused on 12. There's always going to be different opinions, and we have a short time frame to move to 12, but facts and circumstances have changed. They've changed since Wednesday. I was on your show when we had that long interview, and I observed that, wow, I think we're going to have to look at elements of the format, not 12 or not, but within. And, you know, some of the learning that we've gone through, our staff's done a great job in evaluating, looking back at rankings, and if you were at a 5 and 7 kind of format versus 6 and 6, you know, at 5 and 7, with the direction we seem to be headed, you would have unranked teams in a 12-team playoff. And that just doesn't work. People have to understand that. We can't displace the 11th-ranked team in the country for an unranked participant, even though it's a conference champion. That won't work. That won't work for conferences with really high-level football. We're still providing access opportunities. Anybody can play their way in, either through a conference champion that's highly ranked or an at-large opportunity. But we're going to have to work, and, you know, we're obviously still interested in what happens out west. I shared before, I've spoken with Oregon State, Washington State. They have some decisions to make. There's still not ultimate clarity. We just took another step down this particular journey.
Commissioner, let's look ahead to the season since so much has been said. But you mentioned what you're doing this weekend. Next week there's an epic game. And I wanted to ask you something, and I've been meaning to ask you this for a while, because Georgia is getting vilified in many respects because of the loss of the Oklahoma game. That the return was many years down the road. Can you take us through that conversation?
Sure. Yeah, and I'll take responsibility for that if people want to tweet at me angrily. I'll go back to my Southland Conference experience. When we added, you have game contracts in place, and you're going to have to work your way through. And to the credit of both, there were attempts to see what might fit. And then when we move things up, so one of the realities is we were scheduled for 25, and you talk about fit, and then remember last summer for the first time, the Big 12 said, well, maybe we need to move earlier. So there were a set of complexities that were lingering, and we needed to make some decisions as a conference. The schools needed to have the opportunity to go fill that schedule. It does have an impact. I think both Oklahoma and Georgia still have the opportunity to show that they're high-quality football teams within their own schedules, but it was one of those outcomes of expansion that happened and had a direct and quick impact that one series was canceled. Now, the cool news is you're going to see that game. We'll call it the Board of Regents Bowl, if you know the history of litigation and the lawsuits in the 80s. That game we'll see, every other year and twice every 4 years moving forward. And I think that's where our excitement is.
Yeah, it's just, as you know, it
provides plenty of fodder, right?
Yeah.
But, we had to make a decision. Again, big picture decision. We made the right decision for the Southeastern Conference and our soon-to-be 16 universities. Did it create some short-term disruption and people can make a point of criticism? Sure. But you know what? That's reality.
Commissioner, thank you. This was
I just appeared out of the air. I was in Columbia. The beautiful weather last night, and now I'm sweating on set with you. But thanks for the conversation.
Thank you very much. The Commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, joining us on a very busy news week. We'll take a short break. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And what an afternoon it has been. We're live on Broadway in Nashville. And thanks so much for being here. We head out to College Station where Lewis Riddick joins us. Always great to be able to grab Lewis when we can. Very, very much. I know call tomorrow night for that game, but you just got out of a conversation with Jimbo Fisher. And that's where all the conversation, all the questions have been about the new relationship, the new offensive coordinator, Bobby Petrino. Good afternoon. Tell us what you learned.
Yeah, hey, good to be with you, Paul. Look, I think both of these guys are pretty fired up about this. Bobby will be calling the plays. I think these guys are philosophically, guys who are aligned from an X and O standpoint. There is a lot of respect between the two men as far as, when they were both back in the ACC and how they would kind of look at one another's offenses and see how these two attack common opponents and they would steal plays from one another, without telling the other person. And I think there's just a lot of professional respect. They really seem to have worked out a great system as far as how things are going to run on game day. And I think obviously Bobby's going to bring a lot of experience, a lot of expertise as far as play calling. Jimbo obviously is still the head coach and has the final say on anything that, that goes on with this entire football team, let alone the offense. But he's going to let Bobby call the plays, and it's going to allow Jimbo to kind of, be more of a CEO on game day and kind of, take that kind of 30,000-foot view of the entire football team. And I think that's something that's going to give them a tactical advantage and maybe helps improve the team overall, while Bobby really concentrates on getting this offense in gear and getting them playing much better in 2023 as opposed to last year.
For somebody, and I guess we'll find out soon. I mean, you're Jimbo Fisher. You're considered a premier play caller. It's been part of your DNA for your life, for your entire coaching career, and now you have to pull back. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a conscious decision on his part. I mean, look, I think there's a number of different things that he wanted to gain from doing this. Starting in off the field, it allowed him time to really concentrate on some things as the CEO of the organization, just like all the other coaches at premier Power 5 schools. have to do. Namely, have to spend more time now, you know, on the transfer portal and how much their teams change shape, you know, from year to year with the way there is player movement now. And he wanted to have more time to do that and really focus on that, on the team building aspect of it. And he couldn't do that if he was in meeting rooms all the time, you know, installing offenses and really, you know, buckling down on the X's and O's all the time, which I understand and I get it. And that makes sense. And I think for him, you know, in order for him to do that, he had to really trust that there was someone who philosophically he was aligned with, who saw the game of football the same way he saw it, as far as how you want to attack opponents, how you want to, you know, really call a game, not just offensively, but how it affects the defense. And he thought that, you know, him and Bobby shared that same kind of mentality as far as structurally how they like to attack defenses, how they like to, you know, play a game from a full team perspective, and that, you know, he felt comfortable being able to turn it over to him and let him do that, so he could free him up to do the things that I just talked about. And I think, you know, to be honest with you, Paul, I think it's gonna, you know, maybe it gives Jimbo a fresh set of eyes and a fresh perspective also too, where as to how he can extract more performance out of his team offensively and as a team overall, because look, ultimately that's what he's after, right? He knows that, you know, what they put out on the field last year wasn't acceptable. He knows what the expectations are given the way that he's been killing it on the recruiting trail. But it needs to translate into wins. And he's looking for those extra inches, as he likes to call it, those things that will be the difference between winning a game that's, you know, decided by 7 points or less, or losing a game. And he's hoping that this is one of those things that that will lead to that. And quite honestly, leaving those meetings today, I felt as though, you know, this is something I'm even more intrigued to see now. I'm even more intrigued to see how this football team responds to this new, you know, the new pecking order, especially on offense, and whether Connor Wegman in this offense really does take off and ascend to a new level. And so they've got the talent. They've got the players to do it. They just need to extract that performance out of these guys, and he thinks as though this will give them a chance to do that.
Chatting with Lewis Riddick. Lewis, in our many conversations over the years, we've had a chance to talk to you about Nick Saban, someone you played for and know very, very well. And he has been struggling, apparently, with a quarterback decision. It looks like he's chosen one after four quarterbacks that we all know are about to start in the NFL. Just your thoughts on Nick Saban at this point. A lot of unknowns, maybe more than we have seen in a very long time.
Yeah, I think, you know, even for the great Nick Saban, the game of football has become so QB-centric, right? Even as good as a coach he is from a scheme, strategies, and tactics standpoint, no matter how many good players he has on his football team, no matter how many four or five stars that he has as defensive back, or, you know, the star position, or rush end, or Mike Dacher, or offensive line, it still does come down to the quarterback. It comes down to high-quality quarterback play, not just on the pro level anymore. It's that way in college now. It's that way at the high school level. It's that way at Pop Warner football. The game has become one where you have to win more so now because of your quarterback. You cannot win in spite of your quarterback, not at the level that he's accustomed to winning. And I think that obviously is going to throw a lot of questions into this year as to, like, what exactly will the quarterback position look like? When you lose Bryce Young, I mean, you are injecting a lot of uncertainty into your football season. I don't care how many five stars or four stars you have at any position. It's just going to inject a lot of uncertainty because that guy touches the ball every single play. And so even Nick can't overcome subpar quarterback play, and I think that's where the focus will be on Alabama at this point in time. No, I don't think Nick has lost his fastball, or Nick has not lost, you know, his football IQ, for lack of a better word. He is still the greatest to ever do it. But, you know, obviously, with the way that college football is structured now, Paul, you know this better than anyone, and the way in which you can go worst to first, just like you can in the NFL, because really the transfer portal is it's kind of a supercharged free agency, if that were such a thing in the NFL. These guys can change schools at a moment's notice from year to year with no repercussions. And just imagine if the NFL could do that. If you didn't have to play 4 years in order to reach unrestricted free agency, but you could just change teams from year to year because you don't like it from one you know, one place as opposed to the next place, it's tougher now to win than it's ever been, because any team can improve their fortunes at any time if they get the right players. So I think for Nick and for every coach in college football right now, that's what you have to contend with. It's a whole different landscape now, and I don't envy these guys from a pure coaching standpoint in terms of what they have to deal with. But those are the rules. Those are the rules for everyone. It's not a level playing field. We know that. We know certain schools can compete for certain players more so than other schools can. And for Nick, the game's become even harder. And now without a quarterback that he can hang his hat on like he put Bryce Young in the past couple of years, it's going to be difficult for him, because these other teams, man, it's going to be wild. But that's kind of the thing that I think ultimately fans want. They would just like for it to be a little bit more, have the rules be a little bit more evenly applied across the entire landscape. But the fact that now any team can rise up really and challenge from year to year if they can get certain players, it does make the college game a lot more intriguing.
Final question for Lewis Riddick from ESPN. Lewis, you're at the center of the draft every year, and you've seen these Georgia players come and go. Just some overall thoughts on what Kirby Smart has accomplished and what's left for him to continue to do.
Yeah. Look, he is obviously, just like the draft is the lifeblood of NFL team building, recruiting is the lifeblood of college football team building. And what he's been able to do as far as getting the players into Athens, but then developing them and utilizing them to the degree in which he has been able to is nothing short of remarkable. Because, look, this isn't just about having all the five stars and having all the four stars. Look, Texas A&M has plenty of those guys too, okay? What Kirby has done in terms of developing and utilizing them is nothing short of remarkable. You have to give him his credit and give him his respect for what he's been able to do, because he has produced some just hellacious teams, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that'll, when it's all said and done 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, will be some of the greatest assembling of talent and then utilizing these guys that the game has ever seen. And from here, now the standard is set. Now the standard for him is nothing short of championships every year, contending for championships every year, putting players in the pros every year. That's what people are going to be going down to Athens expecting, whether it be as a fan watching the game or as an NFL scout going through, you know, that football facility. They expect excellence from Georgia. But that's why you get into this game. You get into this game to try and be the very, very best. He has established himself now in Georgia. There's no questioning him. He has, you know, broken free from Nick's shadow, out from underneath Nick's shadow. And he's establishing his own standard down there that everyone else is now chasing. And that's pretty damn cool. It's cool to see.
Such a treat to be able to grab Lewis Riddick on a Friday afternoon. Lewis, many, many thanks. We really appreciate your time.
Absolutely, man. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you very much. Lewis Riddick from College Station. We are nearing the halfway point. We'll talk to the Tennessee Chancellor in the next hour. Laura Rutledge will join us for the first time in a long time. We'll talk about that and many more guests as we are live in Nashville, where the heat index is just at 98 right now.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
We're back and we're live in Nashville on Broadway with, and Ferk is here. How about that?
It's Vol Country now, man. How about this?
Oh, it's we've talked to Grant so many times from Neyland Stadium. I don't know if I ever told you this. So last year we're doing SEC Nation before the Alabama game, and Heupel was up with us, and he just kind of kicked back. You don't like interrupt. I mean, he's just getting ready, and he looks at me, and goes, "How was Grant yesterday?" I'm like, "How did you know he was on?"
Probably because I was late to the team meeting.
Oh, is that what it was?
No, I don't know. It was so fun last year, man. I remember I was 0-for-1 going into that game last year because you came 2 years ago to Knoxville.
Right.
And I made the claim that we were going to go shock the world and beat Georgia. And then I got harassed on Twitter for about 48 hours for calling that one. And then I called it again last year with Alabama. And look what
you
happened.
You got that one right.
How about that?
You gave me a good idea to jump on the Tennessee bandwagon.
There you go, man. Easy for you. You're a grad.
Well, it hasn't been easy.
It hasn't been easy, man.
Previous
for any of us.
15 years. Let's talk. We talked briefly when we were together down the street during media days. You were with Shannon Terry, who is such a respected entrepreneur. Tell us about a little bit more about your latest projects, and I see it everywhere in connection to NIL.
Yeah, it's so special. What we're doing at On3 is you know we're at a intersection in college athletics. You just had the commissioner up here to where it is a beautiful time to be in sports media. You know this. And, you know, what we're doing at On3 with the athlete and how we're being a promoter for the athlete, we're rooting for the athlete. That is something that is so overlooked in this day and age. You know, everyone's looking at conference realignment. What's best for the school? What's best for the coach? It's really an easy route to go take to be, quote unquote, for the athlete. And that's something that we're doing. And we're building. We have the traditional, you know, media build that Shannon is, you know, so great at, that he's mastered so many times. But with NIL and transfer portal, On3 is different. And how we've been able to go and build in just 2 years. We just had our 2-year anniversary in August, you know, this month, this past month. And to just think where we have come in 2 years, as a brand, as a media property, has been special. And that's all under the direction of Shannon, man. I mean, he has a vision. He sticks to it, and he has people that deliver for him and builds those brands over and over.
Everything in media is changing, and by the way, we've been saying this for about 30 years before you were born. But for those of you on the very front line, what happens next?
Well, you said it. I mean, the amount of people that have been in sports media, and look, I'm an entrepreneur, but I'm not sports media, you know, by trade, right?
Right.
But walking into, and you've seen how many people have gone into sports media, and you said it on Media Day, that bankrupted them, right?
Right.
Shannon's been so unique because he's adapted with what the environment, the ecosystem is demanding, right? What he built, you know, at the previous two stops is different from what the demand is now, right? People want authentic media. You know, they want real content. And, you know, you're always going to have the social and the endemic part of it and everything, but he's adapted and, you know, whatever need was, you know, had something that needed to be delivered on, he came and brought it. I mean, it's just so unique, and that's something that isn't necessarily easy, because when you've mastered something and been so good at it, you want to double down on it.
Help explain to the audience, because I mean, you're living proof. I mean, you were playing football not that long ago. The intersection between the current athlete and what you guys are doing and how it all works.
Yeah, it's unique. It's so cool to be so closely removed, but to also to be able to connect to the athlete, right? And someone that played pre-NIL, during NIL, and now working so closely in the space with athletes, you know, post-career, right? And I mentioned it when we first started talking. I mean, the angle to be for the athlete and help athletes navigate this space is so unique right now. Common misconception is, you know, athletes are not getting taken care of, are getting screwed over in this era. Not true for 98% of athletes across the country. Being a student athlete right now is a special, special time. I mean, I had a phenomenal experience at a Power 5, high D1 institution, right? And it's getting better. The meals are getting better. The apparel deals are getting better. You're broadcasted to a national audience through these TV deals. The resources, athletes are getting paid by these institutions, Alston money, cost of attendance checks. And so the resources that go into a four-year scholarship package to majority of the D1 athletes across this country is, quote unquote, more than their market value than a lot of these kids. Now, are there athletes out there that, you know, are producing and making more for the school than other athletes? Absolutely. And that's where there's an inequity, right? But for majority of athletes across this country, man, they're in a special time right now. The resources that schools are putting for athletes right now across this country is mind-boggling.
Just a couple of seconds left, but there was a concern early on that it would be distracting, but it seems you're living proof of that. The athletes are benefiting from it, and they're engaged.
They are. And I think more and more athletes, and just like anything, it always works itself out, right? I mean, that's just how these things go. And if you would ask that question 2 years ago, you would have had a lot of people in the same space that were making vastly different claims.
Right.
And they've pivoted two or three times since then. But as we sit here right now, man, like, Shannon has been extremely vocal about this. This is going to be an exciting college football season. What NIL and what the ecosystem of college athletics has done, the business of college sports and kind of everything that's happened, you know, it's going to cause parity. And you know what? The two or three teams that were fighting for a national championship year after year, that might be six or seven this year. Rosters are spread more wide. Recruits are going to schools that they necessarily weren't over the last decade. And the playing field's been leveled.
Grant, thanks so much. It is always such a pleasure to get a chance to mine your knowledge and your experience.
I love it.
Grant Furking from On3. We will take a break. We're at the midpoint. The Chancellor of the University of Tennessee will join us in about 30 minutes. Florida fans, you might want to put the sound down. Michael Bratton is next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.